This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. A group of local high school students got a personal lesson in history and tradition this summer as they created a documentary theater production. They based their project on the voices and true stories of people who live in Durham, North Carolina. It's called the Bull City Dignity Project, and it explores themes like gentrification, LGBT life, racism, and civil rights history. The production runs three times this week. It starts at the Hayti Heritage Center. It concludes at the Pinhook. Joining us now to talk about the play are two of the organizers of the Bull City Dignity Project, Kari Barclay and Laura Haft. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you on the program.
Good to be here.
Thanks.
Also joining us are two students who have helped create and curate the voices and write the plays. They are co-starring in the production. Dominique Casamajor and Leoncia Gillespie are both with us on the State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kari, let me ask you how you got the idea for this Bull City Dignity Project. How did it come about?
So Laura and I are both students at Duke, and we each come from different backgrounds. I come from things from a theatrical background, and she comes from things from a spoken word poetry background and a writing background. And so we're thinking, how could we best use our skills in a way that would really engage with Durham as a community and produce a piece of art that really felt local of, by, and for Durham?
Laura, how did you recruit the students?
So we use something that we call a snowball sampling model. So I actually know Leoncia, originally from working at Hillside High School. We work with the writers, with their writer's block. It's a poetry group. And she's a fantastic poet. And so that's one of the ways that we started recruiting students is I reached out to her and said, hey, Leoncia, who are some of the fantastic writers at your school? Who are some of the strong actors? And she started reaching out to them. Another way that we did it is we actually reached out directly to teachers and we asked them to nominate students to us. And we asked them to look at students who were strong social justice advocates, who are great writers, and also students who are good performers. And we looked at all those things. And then we had them do a combination interview and audition. So we weren't just looking for people who had good stage presence, but also who would be part of this really good community as we were working as a cast, because we're not just putting on a play. The students are actually co-writing the show. So they're doing all the interviews with us. And then they're taking those interviews from transcriptions. And they have turned those interviews into the script that you're going to be seeing. And so we really need a group of brilliant students. And that's what we found. And so using that very rigorous process.
Well, I think that we got a pretty good sketch of what documentary theater is, Kari, but tell us more about what exactly documentary theater is and what you're going for here.
Yeah, so documentary theater is exciting because it's using the stories of real people from the community and using their real words. So you get a lot of interesting things of taking them word for word from recordings of interviews. And so you get all the ums, you get the ers, you get the texture of things. And you can really see people thinking through things on stage. I mean, what is it like for somebody to talk about race with all the ums and ers? You can kind of see their discomfort sometimes when talking about uncomfortable subjects. And that can be really cool, is to get that texture that a playwright will have a difficult time capturing.
So, Dominique, tell me about this project. Tell me about your subject and who you interviewed and what that was like for you.
Yeah, so I guess my role in this project will be one of the actors, one of the co-writers as well. I started by interviewing a local entrepreneur. I'm not going to say her name. She's not actually into production, but she gave me a lot of insight about entrepreneurship and about how, you know, black entertainment and the black arts is so vital for Durham's culture. A big interview I did was with a international activist, Lamont Lilly, and that's actually the character I'm playing, and he taught me a lot about Afrocentricity, taught me a lot about the history of Durham, the history of slavery, and he spoke a lot about, you know, getting your name out there, inspiring others, and motivating and encouraging and things like that.
Leoncia, tell me about your experience. Who did you talk with and try to then embody as in this project?
Well, my experience was a little bit different because I came into the process a little late, and so I didn't get to interview anyone, but I helped transcribe some of the interviews, so it was like I was kind of there with the people as I sort of typed out what they were saying. And for me, I was really in a position of learning along the way, and that's something that I really loved about this, because I've lived in Durham my entire life, but there was so much that I just didn't know. And to hear people who lived here in Durham talk about the history and things that I hear every now and then, but I don't really hear from a personal perspective, that was awesome for me.
Give me an example. What was it that you learned in this project?
So I heard Lamont Lilly talking about artists living here and how artists sort of moved to Durham because it's an area where they can find affordable living and they can do their work and just be able to do it and enjoy what they're doing. And as gentrification happens, they can no longer afford the housing here. And it's interesting because it's kind of like a cycle because gentrification happens and people are moving to Durham because they like the art scene here and the creativity of the people, and the people who make it like that can no longer afford to live here. And so that was really interesting to me.
Dominique, what about you? You're not originally from Durham, right?
I'm not.
So how long have you been here? How much of the city's history did you know? What did you think you were getting into when you moved to Durham?
Yeah, sure. So I was born in Cheverly, Maryland. I grew up there for 6 years, and I moved down in Durham. I was about first grade, second grade, so mm-hmm. I've been here for a good 10 years. It's a great place, great people. I just love the atmosphere. I love the people. Are just they're so easy to talk to. So coming into Durham, I had no idea what to expect. I saw a lot more. I had bad allergies, so I had a lot more trees. You know, my eyes get puffy, nose runny, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I was really into sports and stuff, so it was great down here.
What did you learn about this place from doing this project?
Oh, I learned so much about Durham. I learned about the different areas. I learned about how the LGBT community, that's something I haven't been exposed to while I was down in Durham. And in this project, that specifically, it's gave me so much exposure for the suppression and the repression and, you know, what they've gone through in Durham and how that's actually been a nationwide thing. That's a big thing.
You must have known something about that, right? I mean, it's on your news feed. You pick it up and you check out what's being said about LGBT rights. And yet this seemed to open your eyes to a deeper level.
Right. You would think, right?
Well, that's the deal. So explain that to me.
Yeah. So I guess a big thing I've learned regarding the LGBT community would be how actually the African Americans in the community they've already been discriminated from a social kind of complex, but then regarding LGBT, they were even more suppressed. And
well, you have a scene that you recorded earlier in the Bull City Dignity Project that I think in some way sheds light on both of these communities and some of the frictions, some of the tensions that while both are being suppressed and oppressed by what we would call the dominant culture mm-hmm. for a variety of political and economic reasons, they can also be put in tension against each other, which is a great scheme of things. I want to play this bit of a scene. Do you need to set it up for us? Do you want to set up what we're about to hear? What's happening here? This is, you're talking to Mandy Carter, right, in this one? And so maybe somebody can set that one up for
us.
Yeah,
so what's happening here is we have Adam Limehouse, who was the regional field director for the Amendment 1 campaign, which for those of you who don't know, it was the campaign to make to define marriage as between a man and a woman. And so we have Mandy Carter, who is speaking here as well. And she is an LGBT activist that we interviewed. And she basically, you'll hear it for yourself. But when we,
go ahead, let's listen.
Well, I have to tell you, I am, because I lived in, I'm about to get emotional about this.
Mandy Carter, LGBT activist.
Amendment 1 was not the first time we had such a thing. It was the first time we had it in the state of North Carolina because it was the first time we had a Republican-controlled House and governor. And we already had done this out in California with Prop 8. Critical lesson learned if you're in the state of California. And you know that you have virtually no outreach to the African American community, no outreach to the faith community, and then when you get the vote you got in Prop 8 and what happened, and the first thing I hear is, we don't know why the black community didn't have to support
our community. Shame on them. There were no black people in those organizing meetings, Benji. There were no people of faith in those meetings.
There is a truth to that, because the People of Faith outreach model developed in North Carolina, with input from the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and the Human Rights Campaign, after a decade and a half of work across the country, and reflection from Prop 8 in California. People had become racist around African American people of faith, so they had to do better.
But the first group that had been blamed about why Prop 8 failed was the black community. I cannot tell you how devastating, how detrimental that was for that group. You had religious groups pouring in millions into the state of California to defeat Prop 8, but that wasn't the first group to get mentioned as to why Prop 8 failed in California. Amendment 1 is our version of what happened in Prop 8.
I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina.
I had said for many of us, if that ever came up in North Carolina, we'll pull together our own organization, our own efforts.
I've worked on campaigns in West Virginia, North and South Carolina, Maryland, New Jersey.
But we never got a chance.
Chance.
Because they brought in a white gay man from the state of Maine to run this campaign in the state.
There's a truth about politics that I've come to accept that maybe I shouldn't. Politics, and especially campaign politics, is very much a matter of knowing and not having pissed people off.
And I never got a call.
I made some calls, got an interview, and they needed a regional field director, so they hired me.
I've been living here for 30 years.
Honestly, it just feels like chance now. But there's a little more to it than that. So the first day I started, my boss looked at me and said, "You work for the gays now, boy." And you could hear the Capitol, which was amazing. It was the first time someone had ever made me watch them pronounce the capital letter. The, capital T, gays, capital G. It was nice.
That was a scene from the Bull City Dignity Project, acted out by Kari Barclay and Leoncia Gillespie. You can catch them, Leoncia and her fellow actors, doing the rest of that play at the Haiti Heritage Center August 13th and 14th, and then at the Pinhook on the 15th. So, Leoncia, what was it like for you to sort of embody this tension? Because it seems to me that this might have been something you had just learned about, this kind of tension, right?
Definitely. I definitely had to listen to the transcription of, or read that and listen to the interview from Mandy saying that herself, those words. And then also just really tune into director's notes and read and try to understand what I was talking about. And like even recently, I just realized that when she said, "We don't know why the black community didn't support our community," I understood that there was a certain tension behind that line. But something that Kari pointed out to me was the fact that by saying the black community didn't support our community, it kind of took the black community out of the LGBTQ community. And that was something I hadn't really thought of. And so just every time I look into the script and what I'm saying to understand how I can portray this character and the meaning, I learned something new about what's going on in the real situation. So,
Dominique, what about you? Again, the idea of sort of embodying this. In fact, maybe we can get you to do part of a scene that you set up, that's part of your scene. We'll do that live. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, definitely. It's so much character development. You have to listen to that cadence. You have to listen to that texture. You have to find a meaning behind what they're really saying. You actually have to literally study the transcription and find a more deeper meaning than probably the interviewee themselves wouldn't think they said. So,
well, that's it. I mean, it's not in the transcript, isn't it? Is it? I mean, by doing the interview live, by remembering those gestures, the pauses, I mean, you can't see how much pain there is in a transcript when there's a 4-second pause, but that's present on the page. Something that you then have to reflect in the actual transcription. I think we have time for a little bit of that scene if we do the short version of it. Can we? Is that who's doing this? The one that we're going to do live. I've lost track here.
So that will be Leoncia, yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I'll take you back to the summer of 1999.
Lamont Lilly.
I was a sophomore at NCCU.
My great-great-great-great-grandfather was enslaved in Georgia, and some slave masters had agreements that, like, you could buy yourself out of slavery if you got employed in little, unskilled jobs, but it was still pretty impossible.
I made a very bad decision. I hooked up one of my homeboys with an employee discount.
He had a little crop for himself, but every night the night riders would come and burn his crop down.
To make a long story short, I caught a felony over an embezzlement charge.
So he had to go into the forest and clear out a space for himself and plant his crop there.
Which, really, what I was doing wasn't really even embezzlement, but I was young. I was alone and kind of wanted to be grown without my parents. So I took a public defender and they said, hey, just plead guilty. And even to this day, at 35, I'm really paying the price for being a so-called ex-felon.
So he moved to settle his family in Texas. He founded a community there and founded a church there. But I've always been very cognizant of these stories that are in my blood, which culminate in my existence and how they shape you in ways you may not know, and that your life is inevitably a political testament. My great-grandfather was murdered by white police officers. Today, here I am participating in demonstrations and protests and going to panels and, you know, reading.
That was a scene from Bull City Dignity Project, acted out by Dominique Casamajor and Leoncia Gillespie. You can catch them at the Hayti Heritage Center, the 13th and 14th, and the Pinhook on August 15th. What's the takeaway from this project? What was the big lesson for you in all of this, Dominique?
Just every chance you get to get on that stage and inspire and talk to people, it's such a blessing. Don't ever take that for granted.
What about you, Leoncia? How much of this, I mean, had you intended to be an actress? Is acting any part of what you had thought you were going to be doing?
Not at all. When I was little, I wanted to be an actress, but I've sort of gone away from that. And going into this, I think I just wanted to sort of learn more about the city that I'm from. And that definitely happened. There's so much going on in Durham that you think, like, you wouldn't miss in 17 years, but I've missed a lot. And this sort of exposed me to everything that's here.
Laura, talk about those director notes. How do you direct a project like that? You want to allow a lot of learning to take place, but you also want, you know, there has to be some direction. What approach do you take in this?
Yeah, so this is actually something Kari and I think a lot about, is what our role is as far as directors. I think from the very beginning, we've made it pretty clear that we're not the teachers of the project. We don't stand in front of the classroom and say, this is what we want you to do. But at the same time, sort of stepping back and allowing the students to have a bit more of this creative vision. Again, they're co-writing the script. They're the ones doing these interviews. But then having enough of a leadership role that the production isn't just floating, that we're saying, hey, we want you to run this scene because it needs a little bit of work. Or we're making sure that the consent process for the interviews are going smoothly, or whether it's bringing in community partners, which I think has also been a really important part of the production. So we've brought in activists and writers. We've brought in Duke professors to come in and co-teach with us as well. And I think sometimes having a bit less of a hierarchical learning process actually takes more work than a traditional teaching role. And so that's the way that we've sort of approached this process. And so it's sort of a leadership position where you sort of try to go to the back of the room. And it's been hard at times. And just yesterday, Dom and Kari and I were having a conversation about ways that we could do better. And I think we try to say, hey, what do you need from us? What could we do better? And we mess up a lot. I mean, frankly, like, I'm 19 years old. And some of these students, you know, they range from 15 to 18 is our oldest. So, you know, our oldest student is 1 year younger than me.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Laura Haft and Kari Barclay are organizers of the Bull City Dignity Project. Dominique Casamajor and Leoncia Gillespie, two of the actors. The Bull City Dignity Project is going to be on stage at the Hayti Heritage Center August 13th and 14th, the Pinhook on the 15th. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, a new documentary about Hollywood's golden boy, Tab Hunter. Stay tuned.